Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right, a football Friday. Even if the Texans aren't necessarily playing this weekend, we still got plenty to dissect and get excited about and talk about. You could join the conversation over the next 4 hours, 713-572-4610. Get to us on the YouTube and Twitch chats as well. Happy to be in again for the fellas. Are we feeling better about the Texans without them even playing? Do you feel better after seeing last night's result on Thursday Night Football where the Giants, as a 7.5-point underdog, not only beat the Eagles, but beat them by 17. You know, I brought some positivity yesterday when looking at the future of the Texans. Then we get that result last night. B. Scott, how are we feeling today? Are you feeling better about the next couple of months here for the Texans based off of what we've been seeing lately in the NFL?
I do. I like your argument a lot better from yesterday when you were saying that the Texans were in a spot or in the perfect spot or a spot where they want to be in, given what's around, and not just the fact that they're playing better, but the fact that you can't really make a lot of what you're seeing around the league. Like, there's a lot of mediocrity out there.
Oh, yeah.
And the Texans are right there in the midst of it. They just happen to be on, or appear to be at least, on the upswing of it. But right there in the middle of what Sean Pendergast was just saying a moment ago, it's like, you know, 20 teams that are in the middle class of the NFL right now. And then you take it to last night, where, as you mentioned, the Giants as underdogs beat the defending Super Bowl champions. And if you had gone before the season and you were just chalking up wins and losses and trying to pick, schedule pick, if you will, you would have given the Eagles this game and probably in the opposite direction, maybe even by the two touchdowns or, you know, by the double digits that the Giants won by. And so what it tells me is that really anything goes right now. Anything can happen right now. Like, I wouldn't have predicted before the season that the Texans would be in a position to beat the Ravens on the road.
Right.
And I wouldn't have predicted by the following Thursday that the Giants would be in a position to beat the Eagles on the road. But what are we seeing around the league? The teams that were at the top, the Eagles, the Chiefs, the Ravens. I mean, you just look around across the board, there is a lot of uncertainty. I talked about discord with the Eagles going into this game and them just being an interesting watch from that standpoint,
yeah.
Their talent versus the vibe around that team. And then what do? They go out there and they do the exact thing that they've been doing, where they have like a tale of two games, you know, where they'll be dominant for a stretch and then they go missing, or they start off terrible and then they're dominant late. This one just happened to be where they look like the Eagles early on and then they disappear for the rest of the game. And that just speaks to the unpredictability of the league right now. So I do feel better about the Texans' chances just because I can't feel great about anybody's chances.
Exactly. Yeah. Everyone's bad.
Yeah.
I mean, there's more parity than ever right now in the NFL, and that's a statistical fact in the sense of we've had more games be a one-score game in the final 2 minutes than any other season to this point, any other season in NFL history. So we've had more closer competition this year in the NFL than any other year. And the last Thursday night football games kind of proved that point, where last Thursday you had the Rams as big favorites against the Niners. The Niners were all beat up, injured, on the road, still won that game, which maybe actually gave you more reason to be concerned about the Texans on Sunday, but they took care of business. And then last night, to your point, not only preseason, I had friends texting me yesterday, you know, because I'm from the Northeast, so I have Eagles friends and I have Giants friends, and, you know, the Eagles fans are saying, oh, we're going to, this is going to be what a boring game tonight, yada, yada, yada. And the Giants end up winning by 17. So just look at the last two Thursday night football games where we think the Rams are really good. They suffer that loss. You think the Eagles are good. They suffer that loss last night. And like you said, I mean, everyone's kind of a paper tiger right now. The Eagles were 4-0, but they were outgained in all four of those victories. And people were kind of pointing to this regression that we've seen the last 6 days, really. The Bills, the teams the Bills have beaten this year are combined 3-17. They really haven't been tested yet. The Colts have 3 wins against teams that each have 1 victory right now through 5 weeks. And their defense looks better than maybe we thought, but also has allowed 28-plus points twice already this year. The Jaguars, Trevor Lawrence has a 78 quarterback rating. He has as many turnovers as touchdowns, but the defense leads the league in forced turnovers. Is that going to continue this year? So when you look around at the teams that have the good records now, it's very easy to poke holes in them, like the Eagles about a week ago, and then look what happened with Philadelphia. So my point being, that very well could happen. The Colts could go into a slide. The Bills, the Jaguars, we don't know how good any of these teams truly are right now.
Yeah, you're seeing it across the league, and even if you just isolate it to the AFC, like, think about it. If the AFC South right now, through 5 games, and I know they're, you know, 5 games and counting, if the AFC South right now looks like the best division in the AFC, but you deep down don't truly believe in the teams that are at the top of the AFC South, then what does that tell you? It tells you that it's a division that can be had, much less that it's a conference that can be had that's in peril to a certain degree. So, yeah, no, I don't think that you can be sold on anyone. I don't think you can look at the Texans' schedule and say, oh, well, this is a team that they can't beat, or this is a game where they're kind of against the – they're kind of, you know, up against the A-ball or anything. Like, for me, I'm actually at a point where I just – I want to see close games now, because I want to see how do the Texans perform in close games. Like the fact that you have so many close games, and this is going to be the difference between the good teams and the not so good teams. Where do the Texans fall along that ledger? Because that was my issue with the point differential argument yesterday, right? Like, yeah, it's great that they got a high point differential, but it's hard to believe in the amount of points that they won those games by because of the teams that they played. But if they can win a close game against, say, a Seattle team, or a close game against the 49ers or the Broncos or when they play the Colts, like, that'll be a little bit more or a lot easier to believe in, I think, or a lot more convincing in their favor.
And I think everyone right now is beatable. I mean, we saw that with the Bills. We saw that with the Giants, even the Lions this year. Take any team that has one of those top records, the Colts, the Jaguars. They don't scare me to the sense of thinking like, oh, no way could the Texans or no way could this other team actually beat the teams. I mean, that's the great thing about the NFL. And it's what I said to Lopez on Wednesday when we were going through the next 2 months and these tough 8 games coming up for the Texans after the bye. But as you already alluded to earlier, like, who would have ever guessed Sunday's game against the Ravens would have gone that way a couple weeks ago? And who would have ever thought that the Ravens would be that depleted by the time the Texans got to Baltimore? Somewhat similar in as we try to forecast forward and you look at the schedule and think like, oh man, it's going to be a really tough 3-game stretch coming up a little bit later on. But we have no idea what sort of shape these teams are even going to be in when the Texans get there. You know, the 49ers are already banged up, and that's still 2 more weeks away. We don't know who the quarterback's going to be for that game. So you just don't know who you're going to get on the other side, along with this idea that even when teams are healthy, everyone right now is gettable in the NFL.
Yeah, and then on the Texan side of it, like, if you're just to focus on yourselves, we talked about this, it does look like they found some things, right? They looked early in the season or earlier in the season, right? The first couple of games, like, they were still trying to find themselves, still trying to figure out who their playmakers were, their offensive line, not in shambles, but not fully healthy and new already. So, like, trying to figure that part out. They seem to have found a little bit of a rhythm, specifically on the offensive side of the ball. And then the defense is one of the better in the league, that, as we talked about. So it's not like you're working from scratch or working with nothing. You're legitimately playing a lot better football at a time where it's just a really uncertain landscape around the league. So these two things working together, working in concert, are reasons to be encouraged about the Texans, even in the bye week. I mean, it's been a real interesting sports watching week to kind of be in this space of your football team's on the bye week, and so you're not completely focused on the next game because the next game is 2 weeks later. Your baseball team is out of it for the first time in a decade. So it's literally been a decade since you weren't really just like all in on postseason baseball. You get to watch it kind of as a casual observer, which is also fun. And then, of course, you know, you had Kevin Durant debut earlier in the week.
It's
just a real unique week. But specifically on the Texans, I feel like I've only gained more encouragement starting with Sunday all the way into last night's game, and just kind of understanding that more is probably possible than what you were giving it credit for earlier in the season.
Yeah, I think so. I also think part of that, too, is that's what happens when you don't play. So like even this Sunday, and I think a lot of Texans fans could watch a look around the league. And, you know, since the Texans don't have a chance of losing and you see some other teams lose and you can feel even better about them. Cornbread said division games. You know, that's the Niners and the Rams. Last night was a divisional game. Sunday when the Bills lost to the Patriots, divisional game. And yes, those are always more of a toss-up, but that gives you more hope for the Texans to go up against the teams ahead of them. I know they already lost to the Jaguars.
Yeah.
That was a toss-up game, too.
Yeah, that's making the point, actually.
Yeah, right.
That's making the exact point. We even talked about this yesterday, how it and it's a little unsettling, but it does feel like in some ways you need to, if not run the table, at the very least you got to split with the Colts, and you need to win that next game against the Jags, and there's no 100%. Reason to lose to the Titans under any circumstances. And so, depending on how you look at it, you might even really need to sweep, and it's hard to expect that going forward. But, I mean, you're looking at it, and you're like, hey, man, there's just so much parity. Like, that is possible.
For sure. I'll say this about the Texans and the division. They have the best unit of the three teams, their defense. It's hard to rank special teams, but right now the Texans have the number one special teams in terms of DVOA as well. So they have two of the three best units in the division. And defense, we know, defense travels. Defense usually carries. That can get you a far away. The other teams, when you look at their strengths, those are surprises. Like when you look at the Colts, you're surprised that Daniel Jones is playing so well. When you look at the Jaguars, you're surprised by how many turnovers they're getting on defense. When you look at the Texans, you're not surprised by how good this defense is. This is what this defense was supposed to be for the Texans. And that's what has been their strength. It's what's the strength of the division. So my point being, if you believe in regression to the mean for Daniel Jones, and you believe the Jaguars' defense is going to regress to the mean as well, you probably don't feel that same way about the Texans' defense. But if you think those things are going to turn, you might feel like the Texans' offense can't be this bad, or as bad as the first 3 weeks, you know, all season.
I would, though, keep an eye on the Daniel Jones thing, though, right? Because I agree, it is shocking. But the unsettling part about it is that it is also convincing. Like, it looks sustainable. Like, he looks comfortable.
I think it is.
He looks like a good fit with Shane Steichen. So I don't want to dismiss what they're doing. I just think that the Texans are a lot closer than they looked a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. How do you feel as a Texans fan after watching last night? Maybe indifferent. Or did seeing the Giants blow out the Eagles give you even more hope for the Texans' future of this season, especially with this tough schedule coming up after the bye? You can let us know on the text line, 713-572-4610. Just getting started on this Football Friday. Let's be positive on this Friday. Let's feel good about the Texans, even though they're not playing this weekend. Hey, when we come back, the Astros obviously unloaded a few of their coaches yesterday. Now that they've made those changes, what moves would you still like to see this offseason? What would you like to see next? What is still on your wish list as an Astros fan? Let us know, 713-572-4610. We'll get to that next. Just getting started. It's in the loop.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Happy Friday. The fellas are out today. I'm Luke Morrow alongside Brandon Scott. Coming up, now the Astros made some coaching changes yesterday. What move would you like to see next? What else is on that wish list for this offseason? Let us know on the text line, 713-572-4610. Reggie and J-Lo might be out today. We're happy to be in. But Figgy Fig is on the steel wheels. And let me tell you, he is looking sharp today. Get to YouTube or Twitch to go check it out.
Oh, man, that's Figgy's always fly, man.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Fly guy.
So there, I'm man. Actually, I got to work an event after this.
Okay.
It's my little side gig. And people know I do a photo or work for a photo booth company. Mm-hmm. So I got to, you know, dress. I think it's a wedding or something, man.
Nice.
So, yeah, man. But Figgy's fancy, man. You got to come correct if you go. You're going to be around Figgy, man. You got to look the part. We were walking around New Orleans, walking the streets of New Orleans. I'm like, man, I got to be right, man, if I'm going to be next to Biggie Feet. You know?
I hear you. That's why I'm intimidated to hang around him.
Stop it, man. It's not an intimidation thing. It's just a step up. Step up your game, man. Because old buddy over here is gonna be fresh, no matter what.
Yeah, looking sharp. Looking like, I don't know, like a Kingsman or something. You look like almost like a sort of like spy-ish,
yeah.
I would say.
Some people just pull off style better. You know what I mean? I think Figgy's probably one of those.
For sure.
Yeah.
So get over to YouTube, Twitch, check it out. Looking sharp.
Y'all ain't got to do that, man.
I'm just rocking the hoodie. You know what I'm saying? The hoodie and the beanie, man. It's kind of regular over here.
Yeah, I wear a hat pretty much every day.
Hey, probably would have been looking regular, too, if I ain't had to work nothing after this. So.
Hey, man, look the part. Look the part, straight up.
For sure. Hey, the Astros made those changes yesterday. We brought you the breaking news that happened while we were on the air yesterday of getting rid of both hitting coaches, their catching coach, and their head athletic trainer. Now, Chandler Rome did clarify, afterwards that the trainer was not fired as he originally reported it. His contract was up as well. So I think all of those coaches, I know Cintron and I know the trainer, their contracts were up, so it makes it easier to move on for them. I don't know if that knocks it down a peg in the mind of Astros fans where, you know, the front office like didn't actually fire them. It was easier to move on just because their contracts were up.
But do they make a big deal about stuff like this? Because I think I saw on their Instagram page, they had a big old graphic that pretty much said, thank you for everything to the, I guess, the training staff, or the head trainer guy, and then the hitting coach, and then the catcher coach, or whatever his title is.
Yeah.
They put out a graphic from Astros.
I mean, think about it. When you've
I'm like, was that big of a deal like that?
Yeah,
where they get a graphic.
He's been there for a decade, so that coincides with the success of the Astros. I'm not saying how much he did or didn't have to do with the success, but he's been a part of the run, right? He's been there for a decade.
That's fair.
And so, to me, and the point that I'm making there is that really all of this, and credit to Chandler Rome for, you know, clarifying and everything, and that's part of his job to just kind of be clear and on the record. But we can say this part. All of that stuff is semantics. Yes. Like, we're splitting hairs. When you don't bring a guy back, don't renew the contract of a guy that's been around for a decade, or even in the case of Cintron and the coaches that were let go or released or contracts were not renewed. You don't bring those guys back and they've been there for a certain amount of years. Yeah. That is what amounts to. I don't know if anybody else has been let go or not had their contract renewed or they said they didn't want you back. But tell me when you had a job and then you didn't have a job no more. If you felt the difference between whether that's a firing or a release. Or a let go or whatever. Like, it's the same thing.
My thing is, if they didn't have a ton of injuries and a ton of weird stuff going on with certain players and injuries and stuff like that, would they just would have let them go? They would have just, no contract. Peace. We're going a different direction.
No, I mean, I don't know
if they would. They probably would have just signed another contract. Yeah. It probably would have kept them around.
Well, we did talk about this kind of being in this trend yesterday. Like, so they did talk about doing this or maybe not firing or letting go the head athletic trainer, but doing an audit of their return to play policy. Of course, we talked about last year with the Kyle Tucker situation. So it's not like it was just this year. It was like it all came to a head this year and it had more to do with them finally not making the postseason, right? Like, they at least made the postseason last year. But this was a trend. It was trending in this direction really going back about 3 years now, even when they won the World Series. So for it to end this way, for injuries to be a big reason why they weren't able to make the postseason for the first time in a decade, I think was like the cherry on top.
Yeah, and I think also it just reached a breaking point this year too, where some of the stuff, I mean, obviously Kyle Tucker was the year prior, but you have the Yordan thing, some of these pitchers too. It was just like it became too much. It became so ridiculous this year specifically, added on to everything prior. Regardless of how you want to phrase it, yeah, the coaches are gone. By the way, I also don't know if I do like that tweeting out. Like, when you do move on from somebody, it is a nice gesture, I guess. But if I get fired from a company or even my contract's not renewed and then they give like a thank you on social media, I don't know. I feel like I don't really like that. I'm bitter. Yeah. I don't want
that's
that.
That's not like I agreed to leave. Like, you know what? I think I want to move on somewhere else. This is y'all not really renewing my contract.
It just feels like disingenuous to me.
And also self-serving. Like, you're doing it to feel good about yourself. Right, like, you appreciated my time here, even though you're making the decision to move on.
Yeah.
Where maybe I don't actually feel that way. because I'm being let go.
Yeah,
yeah. That's what I mean. This ain't like Dusty Baker saying, "Hey, yeah, this is gonna be my last season."
Yeah,
this ain't that.
Yeah, no. If it was me, I would say you could keep it, but at the same time, I understand how it's self-serving on their part to want to do it
for sure. Yeah.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So with those moves being made yesterday, what would you like to see next? Already on the text line, they said they need to cut off the head of the snake. Joe Espada should be next.
He's the head of the snake?
I'm an Espada guy.
What's with the Joe Espada hate? I don't get it.
I know. I always defend him. Like, I think he deserves a lot of credit for this past season.
Like, I agree. I think this point was made a little bit when he first started last year, you know, the previous year, that it was kind of low vibrations. It just didn't really seem to do a lot for you.
Yep.
But I think over time now that you've actually had a chance to watch him manage, I think he's a fine manager. I don't think they have a Joe Espada problem.
Right.
They got issues now. Yeah. Clearly they got issues.
Yeah.
But Joe Espada is not the issue or far from even being chief among them for me.
I'm with you.
I'm fine with Joe Espada. Like, I'm not like super inspired. I'm not saying he's the greatest manager, but he's a fine manager. He's perfectly fine.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm glad I'm fine with them bringing him back. I didn't think he was worthy of losing his job.
Yeah.
With that said, what would you like to see as the next move? And this doesn't have to be firings. This doesn't have to be staffing. Even just let's talk free agency. Like, what else needs to be accomplished this offseason for the Astros? What's next on that checklist or wish list?
Yeah, so it's a fun part because they do seem to have a little bit of flexibility and, like, they can do some things. I feel like the obvious needs are going to be, you know, figuring out the out, like, they have a left field problem, right? They've got a crowded infield problem. So, like, I don't know exactly what they do with the money in terms of player acquisition or, like, what free agents would they target. You know, obviously pitching is something that you need to always be focused on, I think, every offseason. I think it would be a mistake, and I don't think the Astros are going to do this, by the way, but it would be a mistake to look at them and how they pitched this year in spite of the injuries and say, oh, well, pitching's good. Because they performed well and they just had, you know, they manufacture pitching and guys just step up. No, I think they should be aggressive in that market. But in terms of, like, the rest of the team, it's like you already got a bunch of your pieces already in place and it's about how you configure them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's at the heart of the question for the Astros right now. Like, what do you do with this crowded infield? Does it look like Isak Paredes is going to be playing second base now and Carlos Correa is now at third? If so, what does that now mean for Jose Altuve?
Yeah.
Because, like, I think the biggest question is, how do Yordan Alvarez and Jose Altuve coexist on a team?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, this, and not, like, relationship-wise, they like each other. That's not the issue. How do they coexist as two guys who are somewhat of, you know, let's say franchise icons and guys that are under contract and still productive, you know, with the bat, but are just flat-out defensive liabilities for you at this point, right? So, like, they're barely playable in left. Obviously, Alvarez's case, he's only playable in left. Altuve, not really playable in left or at second base. So you got two guys that are unplayable defensively, but you got to have and really want to have in your lineup. There's one DH spot. How do you make that work? Never mind the fact that it kind of limits your flexibility of using other guys in the DH spot when you want to give them a rest from playing in the field.
That's what I was about to say. I felt like the only way you could play them two is one is in left field and one is in DH, and you just kind of flip-flop a little bit.
Yeah.
But to your last point, that's going to limit anybody else from being the DH.
Yeah, and then in some cases, that might mean that Altuve is playing second base and you allow Paredes to DH.
But then it also means that Yordan Alvarez is in left field. Either way, it means that one of those guys is also in left field.
I think I'm at the point you can't have Altuve and Yordan on the same field like that. That's going to be a little tough, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. It is tough.
Yeah, that's yeah.
So, like, how do you
defensive weaknesses.
How do you solve that question? Like, yeah, I don't know. I don't have a great answer for it.
Well, that's why where you said off the top that they have a crowded infield issue and they have a left field issue. Yeah, I think they just have a Jose Altuve problem right now in the sense of trying to figure out where he goes. And the bat wasn't as strong this year, but it's not like he's, you know, washed up or he's not a good part of your lineup. He's still a very valuable hitter. You just got to figure out where to slot him on a day-to-day basis that it doesn't hurt you in the field or doesn't hurt the rest of your defense and lineup alignment.
Yeah. If you're the Astros, you still want Jose Altuve in your lineup, yes. Right? For a lot of reasons. And I would say chief among them is the fact that he can still hit. But also, you have to ask yourself the question, how? Mm-hmm. How do you do it if he is a liability for you on the defensively and you've got another guy that's like that who is actually your DH?
Right.
You know?
I actually like the position players. I do like the lineup when they're all healthy. For me, this offseason needs to be all about pitching, specifically starting pitching. Let's stop relying on guys like Lance McCullers coming back from injuries and eventually, you know, Luis Garcia trying to come back and all these other guys. Go out and get, especially because you're probably going to lose Fromber. You need a dependable number two. You probably need multiple arms in that starting rotation. And then secondary, I would also like a defensive backup catcher. I don't know if Carantini's going to be back. His defense was lousy this year, too. Diaz's defense was horrendous, bottom in the league.
Yeah.
You need, obviously, those guys can swing it a bit, but you still need a defensive catcher, I would say, to mix in there as well. Backup defensive catcher who you don't care so much about the bat, but they bring the defense. That's on my wish list briefly here for the Astros this offseason. You can let us know on the text line, 713-572-4610. Where would you like to see the Astros go from here? Also, time for the question of the day. Let us know your answer to this on the text line as well. What's the worst way you've seen your team lose a game? Because speaking of baseball, Philly fans just got crushed last night in the way their team lost to end their season. We ask you, what's the worst way you've ever seen your team lose a game? Let us know, 713-572-4610. We'll get to it next. It's In the Loop.
Mahes breaks his bat. Kirkring, got to find it. Throws to the plate. Oh, my goodness. He throws it away. And the Dodgers have won. The Dodgers win.
That's how it sounded last night on Fox as the Phillies season came to an end on that play in the bottom of the 11th. It's In the Loop. I'm Luke Morrow alongside B. Scott filling in for the fellas today. The question of the day because of that Phillies loss. What's the worst way you've ever seen your team lose a game? If you're not familiar with the play, if that audio didn't do it justice, the bases were loaded, two outs, bottom of the 11th, comebacker back to the mound. He bobbled it at first, but by the time he picked up the baseball, if you watch the replays, he still had plenty of time to throw to first base, get the final out of the inning, send the game to the 12th. Instead, he tries to throw it home, which is a much tougher play. Threw it over the catcher anyways. They weren't, I don't think they would have had a chance regardless. And the Dodgers walk off in that fashion to end the Philly season.
Yeah.
It was a rough night for the rough day for Philly, man. I see some account posted all of the teams that was playing. So, of course, the Phillies lost. The Flyers lost.
Yeah. Oh, man.
And then the Eagles, of course, lost to the Giants out of all
teams. And of course, Luke, you know this better than any of us. That is a very particular kind of fan base. Nobody nobody feels like Philly fans feel, right?
Yeah,
like
right.
So whatever the feeling is, you could imagine that it is probably drummed up to the highest degree after last night.
It got to be tough for sports talk in Philly, man.
Yeah, especially one, and I'll give them credit, like it's a very, you know, astute sports fan base. And so I'm pretty sure they're looking at that play like, throw to first, mm-hmm. throw to first. Like there are people there that got the understanding of what to do in that moment. And then even you're looking at the catcher pointing at first base.
That's the worst part.
Like he's pointing at first base. He's telling you what to do. You've got time to do it. And the clear reason why it doesn't get done, the reason why this doesn't happen is because the guy panics. Like there's not a more clear example of his panic than him not being able to see the catcher and understand that he's got the time to do it. He just reacts, right, and throws it home. He has no shot at the play at home. So, yeah.
The way he reacted is like they didn't even go over this.
Yeah.
I feel like they probably should have went over if it you know, if it's a little bunt or something like that, go straight to first. Go to first.
It was my first question. It's like, did they not talk about this? Like, what if this happens? What do you
do? That should have been part of the situation, a what if type of situation.
Yeah. So like, that's clear panic.
Yeah, the only other thing was either he thought there was fewer than two outs, or
he probably just
the pitcher.
Yeah,
there's no way. I mean,
you wouldn't think.
I mean, there is a way.
That's even worse.
But that would be awful. Like, and that's the point.
That is.
It's one thing if you feel like you just got beat, but this is one where it definitely feels like at the end. I mean, just loading the bases to begin with, but to be in that position at the end, and hey, like you can get out of this if you just go to first. And it's a self-inflicted wound to end your season. It's terrible.
My only other thought, as I said earlier, was he was in front of the mound. He bobbled it, had to go get the base. Maybe he thought, I'm not saying I agree with this, but maybe he thought the easier play at that point was home because he was already facing home and he was closer to home as opposed to turning, setting, throwing a longer ball to first base. If you watch the replay, he still had plenty of time and would have gotten
but
the guy
at first. But the bases were loaded, though, right?
Yeah, so the guy's coming home.
I mean, I think the guy's almost home.
Hey, I don't agree, but I'm just trying to get in his head. Third,
a guy is almost home, is going to be quicker to home, obviously, than the guy from home is to first base.
I think his first thought was, I can't let this run us. If the runner score is over, so let me try to get it to home plate since it's right here.
He panics in that moment because it is, you know, he's frazzled. He bobbles the ball, picks it up, thinks, oh, no, here's the winning run. Let me go get this guy.
Yeah, let me try to get the winning run. Let me not let him score.
Yeah, but if you go to first, he doesn't.
I know.
Exactly.
Right? Isn't that how it works? But just in that moment, he's frazzled.
Yeah.
He's not thinking straight.
That's what I think it is. I think he just kind of lost his way a little bit and just thought about the run right there.
Yeah, somebody's got to tell him, like, hey, man, if the ball comes to you, don't worry about the guy at
with
home.
Two outs, if he bunt or have a short little chopper right there, go to first base.
Go to first. It's actually your only play.
It's like Little League. The coaches always say, like, know what you're going to do with it if it's hit to you. And so same idea. He should have in his mind before he even throws a pitch, like, if the ball comes back to me, I'm just going to first base. We play on. I wonder if he addressed the media after the game and gave his reasoning. The pitcher's name is, I think it's Orion Kekering. I think is how you pronounce it.
Man, I've been struggling to pronounce names in this playoffs since it started. It's rough.
Yeah.
It's rough out there. I couldn't tell if it was the manager or the pitching coach afterward doing the exact opposite of a Jonathan Gannon of, like, really encouraging him and letting him know everything is cool. I was like, man, because that is a rough spot. That is one of those where you want somebody to come put their arm around you because you're like, man, I really just gave the game away, the season away.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. So with that said, that's tough to bounce back from. What's the worst way you've ever seen your team lose a game? Plenty of you coming in on the text line, the Cougars in the NCAA championship last year. That was brutal.
That was tough, man.
I forgot.
Didn't even get the shot up.
That
man.
One might win. That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good one, Texter.
That one still hurt.
Goodness,
man.
I mean, I was kind of going to some other ones, but that's up there, especially coming off of the performance against Duke in the Final Four.
Yeah.
You're like riding that high.
And you were up in this game.
Yeah.
I was ready for the parade already. I'm like, okay, they got this one.
Yeah, they were leading the entire way until the last 7-8 minutes, something like that. Yeah. Florida went on that run.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's tough. What about for you guys? If you think back in your fandom, what stands out most?
I mean, I mentioned in the crosstalk earlier, 2019 World Series, Howie Kendrick.
Yep.
Just the way that ninth inning played out, the fact that there was no space to get Gerrit Cole in the game and the questions about that. Like, I don't think, and even though that series turned out to be the road team won every game, mm-hmm. that was what stood out about it, right? I still, even up until that point, the road team had won every game, I still had not considered that the Astros were not going to win that World Series. It's the greatest Astros team that I've ever seen. It's still to this day greater than the ones that actually won the World Series. I'll stand on that to the day I die. Greatest Astros team that I've ever seen was 2019. They did not win the World Series, and it came down to that last little stretch there, and it was really rough, really rough. That one stands out. Also, 27 straight threes missed in Game 7.
That's come in a lot on the text line.
2018 against the Warriors, that is a rough way to lose a game, to miss 27 straight threes. Those two stand out. For me specifically.
Yeah, the one that stand out to me, I got to take it back up when I was a little kid up in Cleveland. I was watching this game. It was the Browns versus the Jags. And it was the last play of the game. The Jags pretty much had no chance. They tried to do a little little last minute Hail Mary, whatever play it was. It was down there the last one, and it was a guy by the name of Dwayne Rudd who thought he made the tackle on a Jags player, but he didn't tackle a guy.
Yeah.
And so he thought the game's over, took his helmet off.
I remember that,
and the game was still going on, and they end up making the tackle. Everybody's celebrating, but it was a flag. And Dwayne Rudd got flagged for taking his helmet off during the play, and that united the whole bottle gate. We call it bottle gate, where Browns fans was just throwing the bottles. And these were real bottles, by the way.
I think this is what changed the rule, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what changed the rule now, where the reason why you don't have real bottles in the stadium now, because they were throwing bottles all over the field. It was nasty work. And I was a kid sitting there watching that game, man.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there watching it with my father. Couldn't believe it. Long story less long, the Browns actually lost that game because I want to say they lined up for a field goal or something like that, won the game, and it was over.
Yeah.
Man. Lost that game, man.
Claim to
because
fame
for
Cleveland.
The guy took his helmet off. That's the only reason they lost the game.
Claim to fame for Cleveland. That's the reason why they have to take the caps off your bottles now and why there's no more glass bottles or anything.
Yeah, you can thank a Brown for that one, that's right. As Hannah Manier like to say.
Thank a Brown. That's right. Yeah, classic.
So many. I grew up, I've mentioned it before, I'm not from this area. I grew up a Vikings fan, so pick your poison. Gary Anderson missing a field goal in the NFC title game in 98. The push-out game and the final game of the 2003 season against the Cardinals that knocked the Vikings out of the playoffs and then changed the rule after that game. Brett Favre in 2009 with the interception.
Oh.
Blair Walsh missing the 27, 28-yard field goal, whatever it was, in the playoffs in 2014, so on and so forth. That's just the life of a Vikings fan, so plenty for me.
Yeah.
Outside of that, though, away from my team, I always think of, and it just makes me laugh, sorry, I think it was 2002, 2003. I remember I was at my aunt's. We were watching the game, the Saints and the Jaguars, when the Saints – trying to get into the playoffs, did all those pulled off the lateral?
Oh, the lateral, yeah.
And then they missed the extra point after all that effort, and they end up losing to the Jags, and that essentially ends their season. It was like, I think it was the second to last game of the season, and they were trying to stay alive for the playoffs. And it was like, oh my God, they actually pulled it off. All the laterals, they returned the kickoff in the final seconds of the game to potentially tie. Just to miss the extra point.
Yeah, to pull off the difficult thing and to not be able to pull off the simple, more routine thing
horrendous.
Is a difficult way to lose. I think, too, this is away from any of our teams, but last year, that Commanders Hail Mary where you got Tyreek Stevenson taunting the Commanders fans as they're about to give up the Hail Mary. So I think it was Noah Brown, former Texas,
who
caught that. That's a terrible way to lose a game. So if you're a Bears fan, you know, watch it, that dude taunt. Wow, you give up the game.
100%. ESPN just did a story this week on him and how I didn't read the story, but just him saying like his life hasn't been the same since. So that was a brutal moment. Just to rip through these real quick on the text line, 24-0 against the Chiefs in the playoffs.
Of course.
Multiple people saying Matt Schaub picked six on Monday Night Football against the Ravens in overtime.
That's one.
Of course, multiple people saying Rockets missing those 27 straight threes against the Warriors. The Frank Reich comeback game, Oilers-Bills in what, 92, I think that was? Someone set a self goal during a high school soccer game. That is brutal. Albert Pujols against Brad Lidge over the damn train tracks.
Yeah, I tried to forget that one.
That's a tough one. And then how about this one? My heart was broken when ND Kalu intercepted an option pitch inside their 5-yard line, took it to the house to beat, is it Aldine High School in the 1991 state semifinals. My dad was a coach and they won the championship the previous year of the losing team. That was from Ocho.
Oh,
man.
That's personal.
Yeah.
Shout out to Ocho. That's some history right there.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Keep sending those in. Worst way you've ever seen your team lose, 713-572-4610 after the Phillies had their season end on a mental mistake last night. When we come back, it's time to go around the NFL. We'll do it next in the Loop.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.